Welcome to the inaugural broadcast of Type 1 Ohio, the podcast dedicated to providing usable information to everyone in Ohio touched by Type 1 diabetes. I'm Kathy Passion, the director of the Central Ohio Diabetes Association. Whether you have T1D, live with someone who does, or interact with someone with Type 1 at your work or socially, this is the place to learn more, connect with others, and get involved. Today, we're chatting with Peter Margaritis, the accidental accountant. Peter is a professional speaker, improv virtuoso, and communication strategist who happens to be a non-practicing CPA in Ohio. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at the young age of 42. Pete's son, Stephen, was diagnosed with type 1 on, get this, 1/1/17 at the genuinely young age of 16. Despite Pete's very busy life, he has made room in his schedule to become an integral part of the Central Ohio Diabetes Association Marketing Committee, donating his time and expertise to help us increase our ability to talk with the community. Pete, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, Kathy, I've been so excited to do this. It's a little weird that me being on this side of the mic versus interviewing,
but yes.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, Pete, we're so excited. And again, without your encouragement and support and training, we wouldn't be even this far. So, Pete, tell me about when and how you were diagnosed with type 1. Weren't you a little old for that?
Just a tad bit. And I'm adopted, so I really don't have any medical history. Mm. And I remember I went in, I was having some, I had a hole in my heart that was repaired when I was 40-ish. And I had to go back in for some blood work. I was having some potassium issues. Mm-hmm. And the cardiologist called me about 3 days later, 4 days later, and said, your potassium looks better now. Hung up the phone and then immediately called back. Said, oh, I forgot to tell you, your blood sugar's high. I said, well, what is it? Mm-hmm. He said, 250. I went, what is it supposed to be? About 100. You need to go to your doctor and be tested to see if you have diabetes, basically. So it was completely out of the blue. I had, looking back, I probably demonstrated a lot of the signs, but not knowing the signs, it was a shock.
Now, Pete, I've met you in person. You're not the incorrect, but stereotypical version of someone thinks of an adult with diabetes. They usually think overweight, maybe, you know, not terribly active. You're none of that, right?
Exactly. I could still always lose a few pounds, but I'm not overly heavy. I try to stay as active as possible. I bike. Get involved. I'm not sitting around on my couch eating Cheetos and watching SportsCenter all day.
Right. It's such a misconception whether the person's type 1 or type 2. But tell me, Pete, did your doctor identify you as type 1 right away? Or based on your age, did your doctor maybe think, well, maybe this is type 2?
My GP thought I was type 2. But I had a family member who was a diabetic, and he's a doctor as well. And he said, Pete, go to an endocrinologist. Just schedule and go. And I took his advice and I did. And he basically told me that I was a type 1.5. And I went, Doc, yeah, I'm always trying to be different, but come on, this is a little bit crazy, don't you think? And he said, you've got there's something in my blood that was causing me, my pancreas to not produce insulin. He said, you'll go from metformin to insulin quicker than most who are type 2. So we're not categorizing you as a type 2. You're closer to a 1, but we're going to start you out with oral meds. And he was right. I think it was a matter of maybe 18 months before that I was doing insulin shots.
Very interesting. Wow. Very insightful of that doctor, too, to catch that and make sure you had the right diagnosis. So, Pete, that still had to be a big change. Tell us what was that like going from, you know, basically perfectly normal and healthy to, frankly, a 24/7 chronic disease?
I was kind of I don't have OCD at all, but I became OCD. I had a spreadsheet. I would write down everything I'd eat, the number of carbs, what I took, what type of insulin I was taking, and I would take it to my endocrinologist, and he would just look at me and go, I wish all my patients would do this. I went, they don't? He goes, Pete, be honestly, they really don't. I wish they would do half of this. And I took it serious. I mean, I knew a few people were diabetics, and I think that's, I didn't know what that meant. I thought it meant you can't give them candy, or they can't eat candy, you know, that.
Right.
But it was much more than that. And once I went through some education with it, I took it to heart. And I was mm-hmm. really regimented, especially when I was on metformin, really regimented with my diet, with my exercise, trying to keep it in line. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a big change. It took about an hour to 2 hours a day out of my day just managing my diabetes.
Wow.
It became overwhelming at times. I'm not going to sit here and say that it didn't. I can't tell you a few times I went, what the heck? But I kept trying to keep this, you know, positive mental attitude. Like, it could always be worse. The doc could have said I had pancreatic cancer. That would be worse.
Right. Exactly.
So yeah. I just tried to keep that positive thought going.
And that's so you. And I'm not surprised. So I'm also not surprised to learn that you jumped on it immediately and just really started managing your diagnosis. But then, after so many years, all of a sudden you were hit with, in some ways, an even more impactful change when your son was diagnosed. Tell us more about that.
My worst nightmare.
Yes.
Actually, I'd been traveling, and I'm usually traveling a lot this time of year into the fall, to about mid-December. And I'd been home for about a couple weeks and started noticing a few things about him. But I wasn't seeing it consistently. I was noticing a lot of bottles of water in the bathroom, and I'm hearing him mm-hmm. urinate a lot. But then I didn't think I would see or hear it for a couple of days. So I was about to say, Stephen, let me check your blood, but I didn't. And it was New Year's Day. We got up. He wanted pancakes for breakfast, of course. Gave him a nice big slab of pancakes, and then about 4 hours later, we met my brother down the short north for a brunch. So my wife and I, he went down. He had more pancakes, more maple syrup, and it was a holiday. And let's throw some Coca-Cola on top of that. And we got back to the house, and he had a headache, and he laid down. And then about an hour later, we were playing gin rummy. And I kid you not, he drank 3 glasses of water and went to the bathroom 3 mm-hmm. times in a 15-minute period.
And
I stopped and I said, Stephen, let me check your blood. Why? Just let me check. And I did. And my meter said, over 600, seek medical attention. I said, okay, let me try again, Steve. And did it. And it said the same thing. And my wife could see the look in my face. I said, if I check my blood and there's a number, we're out of here. Well, there was a number. And we immediately got him to the emergency room, which is less than 5 minutes from our house, where they took his blood and tested it. And even their machine said it's over 600. I think it finally came back at 750. And I remember the ER doc going, looking Stephen square in the eyes and saying, I just want to tell you the truth. You have diabetes. You're a diabetic. And he didn't miss it. He didn't flinch. He didn't cry. He was stoic. And all he did was turn to me and say, hey, thanks, Dad. Appreciate it. So he had a sense of humor about it.
Wow. Where did he get that?
I don't know where he got that, but I was so proud of him for saying that. And then they bust him down to Children's Hospital. Where there wasn't any onset diabetes kids on the floor that day. So we were actually in and out in 24 hours, which it could take, 2 to 3 days, depending upon the number of people they're trying to treat. Yeah. So it was my biggest nightmare that when he was diagnosed, I came home and get some stuff. And I just broke down in tears. But I knew that he would be, I knew that he'd be okay because he's been watching me for he's about 10, 12 years. And, you know, when I would go low and have those periods, he would want to be by my side. He's not leaving my side. So he's seen it. So he's seen that I have not let it slow me down. So he'd been exposed to it, so which was good for him.
It's amazing. It's one of those things you certainly never want to have in common with your children. But in what ways do you and Stephen manage your T1D similarly, and in what ways are you different?
That's a very good question. I am his go-to. We've gotten a lot closer because I am the go-to. We have a lot more communication. Now, when he was first diagnosed and taking insulin, he was not the most regimented individual, which I understood. So just trying to get him to recognize that before you eat, we need to count carbs, and going through the carb counting aspect of it. And sometimes he was good, sometimes he wasn't. Come to find out he's a midnight snacker and wouldn't check his blood prior to. So there was a lot of educating on the front end of Stephen, you need to do that. Well, actually, let me rephrase that. It got to a point that I realized I'm not telling him anymore. I'm going to ask him what he thinks he should do. Because I think that piece of telling him just wasn't sinking in. And so his blood would be 300 or whatever. I said, Stephen, what do you think we should do? He goes, I don't know, Dad. What do you think? But no, you tell me what you think we should do. I will process it, and we'll either do it or I'll make another suggestion. And that's how we handled it for a long period of time. It's still even to this day. I ask him what he thinks he should do. Now, one time I overruled him and I lost a bet. So I'll never overrule him again. He's pretty smart at what he does figuring it out. So he was 16 at the time. And, you know, I'm thinking a few years away from going to college. He's a senior now in high school. I want him to make those decisions. I need to learn that, to have faith in his decision-making process as it relates to this. And also realize he's going to fall. I mean, he's not going to do everything right. It's still so new to him that, like a year and a half, going on 2 years, and it's still – still kind of forgetful, still kind of, he's at my endocrinologist now, and they kind of helped me go, he's still going to make mistakes. It's okay. He just needs to recognize them and try not to repeat them.
Absolutely. But you must be very inspirational to him. I know that you travel extensively for your job. While managing type 1, how does your management of the disease help him, do you think?
I think it helps because we talk a lot. And right now he just went, today he went through his final training for his pump. He went on an insulin pump, which I think was the best thing for him, so he could be a kid again, where he can just give himself insulin versus having to excuse himself, take needles with him all the time and things like that. It's a little bit easier for him to manage. And with the 670, now that he's in full auto mode, it should take a lot of the highs and lows out if it's operating properly and give him a better chance. And the Medtronic reps have said he will have a better chance of never experiencing any complications due to diabetes because of technology and the continuation of the improvement in technology. And today I asked the reps, I said, when's my day? When's my warranty up on my pump? Because I want to go to the 670G. And actually it's November and I'm looking forward to him teaching me what he already knows about his pump. We'll be on the same system. It is. Now the challenge with traveling is when we moved him to the pump, having him replace his insertion set, do his sensors, FaceTime has helped with that, to help instruct him on what to do, make sure he's doing the right thing. Also, the person who's probably got the most patience, my wife, is also, well, she's taking an active role in learning more about what's going on with Stephen and diabetes versus when I had it. So she's learning as well, and she's an absolute saint.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned her. You know, diabetes, all chronic diseases, but diabetes in particular, is a family disease. So tell me about your wife. How is she handling her emotions? She's got a husband and a son living with a very serious chronic disease. How does she manage all that?
Some days better than others. Actually, Kathy, I've got a shirt in my office. It says, "I'm sorry for what I said when my blood sugar was low and high." So when I wear this at times around the house, when I know my blood sugar is high, I know I'm not being the most kindest person around, and just apologize. It's mm-hmm. hard. It's mm-hmm. really, it's really, she worries a lot, as any mother would do. She has a lot of comfort that, you know, I'm able to help her when she's trying to understand certain things that are going on with Stephen. And intellectually, she knows that it's our blood that's making us say crazy things, or act, you know, but it still hurts. It still hurts. Even Stephen with me at times, it still hurts, but I got to say, his blood sugar's high. I think the invisible piece of diabetes is the caregiver, because of what they mm-hmm. have to go through to help us manage our disease. It's mm-hmm. Low blood sugar is the scariest thing I've ever experienced. Because as a friend of mine, who's a type 1, Merle Heckman out of Northern Kentucky, he said, we were talking about it one day, and when you're going low, you panic. Now, American Diabetes Association said, well, you know, when you're low, take 15 grams, wait 15 minutes. Every diabetic mm-hmm. who I've said that, who's experiencing low, all they do is laugh, because our mind is telling us, I want more carbs, because you're shaking, you're sweating, you feel like you're going to die, and all you want to do is eat. But the downside of that is when you do that, your blood sugar spikes all the way to the roof, and then you got to bring it down. And there have been times that has happened to me where I was done for the day. I was scrambled eggs. One time before a speaking engagement, I checked my blood and I was 50. And I was walking into a room of 100 people. I grabbed somebody, one of the meeting planners. I downed a Coke. And I said, I want you to stand in this room here for about 15, 20 minutes. If I fall down, then you need to call 911. I told him what was going on. I said, but if not, if I can get past that first 10 to 20 minutes, I'll be fine. I could finish the... And it was tough, because I was kind of slurring words. I was kind of sounding like I was a little bit drunk. And I was sweating like I was in a sauna. But I did it. But what I found out is I couldn't get out of bed for the next day and a half, because I used every ounce of adrenaline that I had to push myself through this to get it done. That I was, I felt like I had really bad jet lag.
Oh, my gosh. I think diabetes is so much more challenging than people who don't live with it or live around it understand. And honestly, we just can't thank you enough for sharing the realities of it. Is there anything else you want our listeners to know about you, about type 1, your family? I mean, multi-generational, that's still, I won't say it's uncommon, but it's not entirely common.
I think the one thing that I've become extremely passionate about, and you know this, since my son was diagnosed, and I've heard stories, I've been trying to put together a TED Talk type of presentation about the symptoms of type 1 diabetes, especially in children. I've got a friend of mine who you know, his daughter was diagnosed about the same time, just before Stephen was, and I've talked to people around the country, and you know, when I find out that their kid's diabetic, and I have them share the story, and I've been at speaking engagements. If you see your child, you know, drinking just a tremendous amount of water and urinating a lot, have their blood checked. If you see them losing weight, and you go, well, they're a kid, they're really active, they just go have their blood sugar checked. Go to you can probably get the blood sugar checked at, I don't know, I think you can get these little clinics like in Kroger or whatever. just get it done, just to be on the safe side. Because if not, it can lead to not a whole lot of great things. And it'll take a while to recoup from that. I always forget the word. It's a really long word, diabetic ketoacidosis. There it is. And it's your body attacking itself. There's a story that this one woman shared that her GP diagnosed her with H1N1 when in fact it was onset diabetes. And she when they finally figured it out, got her to emergency room, they said that she would have died in about 2 hours if they hadn't got her there.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and healthy lady has a couple children right now. But yeah, I keep hearing that because a lot of people don't understand. You know, type 1 diabetes, you know, from an adult, they're going, wait, isn't that juvenile diabetes? Not anymore. It's type 1 is insulin dependent. Type 2 is insulin resistant. And
exactly.
A friend of mine who's a partner in a firm in Akron just wrote on his Facebook page how he's been able to gain better control over his type 2. He's lost weight, he's exercising stuff, and his amount of insulin or the amount of oral meds he's had to take has actually decreased to a point that's almost non-existent. I'll never get to that because my pancreas isn't working.
I
wear my pancreas on my belt, my insulin pump. But
until there's a cure, and we have our friends at JDRF to look to, and hopefully through their research funding, get us a cure.
Exactly, and I want to help you and Coda help get this message out, help you with the marketing, coming up with ideas on how we can inform the community about this, because it's surprising even other doctors, even a orthopedic oncologist whose son was diagnosed didn't know the signs of diabetes. And it's something that, you know, I think everybody, because you shared this with me once on my podcast, that, you know, a major illness like the flu, bronchitis, could actually be the triggering point and shutting down one's immune system.
Yeah, creating that autoimmune attack.
Right.
Well, Pete, I will tell you, it's been obvious since I met you that your banner is making sure that people know the signs of, in particular, type 1 diabetes, and then, of course, the seriousness of it. And I can't thank you enough for being on our inaugural broadcast of Type 1 Ohio. I also want to thank our listeners for becoming part of the Type 1 Ohio community. This podcast is your podcast, so please suggest ideas, topics, and guests you would like to see us have on the show. You can connect with us by checking out our website at www.diabetesohio.org.